Hi, you're listening to episode 89 of This Woman Can. I am your host, Janice Sutherland, founder and CEO of This Woman Can. Before we get into it, I just want to ask you, have you joined the This Woman Can network yet? It's the community for growth-minded women who are unafraid to challenge the status quo, advance their careers, build and share power without shortchanging their life, and of course, get paid. In other words, it's the place where you, me, and fellow professional women speak our truth, share our successes, and share best practices and get inspired. So I want you to head over to www.thiswomancan.coach to join. So let's get on with it. This week, my guest is Marjorie Wharton, and she hails from Barbados. Marjorie is a trainer, coach, facilitator, specializing in helping people build the skills they need to improve their performance. She really focuses on helping people to better understand themselves and to use that deeper awareness to craft their own success journeys. We really get into it as we start discussing perfectionism and how we as women use perfectionism as an excuse, but also it stops us from our own personal success and how we need to shift our mindset from perfection as a goal. I would love to hear your feedback on the discussion, so please be sure to leave a comment wherever you're listening to the podcast right now. And don't forget, if you want to put a face to the interview, you can actually head over to the This Woman Can YouTube channel to see the videos there. Hey everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of This Woman Can. My guest this week is Marjorie Wharton, who hails out of sunny Barbados. And we have a lot in common, in fact that she's a trainer and she's also a coach. So Marjorie, welcome to This Woman Can.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm so excited to be a part of this initiative.
Well, I wonder if you'll say that at the end of it, but never mind.
I'm sure I will. I am sure, absolutely sure I will.
So Marjorie, tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Okay. All right, that's a nice broad question, not too narrow or anything. So I describe myself primarily as a facilitator, a trainer, and a coach.
Okay.
And so I would have to say that that's the kind of thing that I have evolved into. When I started my career, I started working, that was the furthest thing from my mind as where I would wind up. I actually remember at university, I started off by studying management.
Okay.
And the reason that I studied management studies was because I was good at organizing events. I know there's an obvious link. You can see it right off, right? I remember taking initiative and being the one who'd come up with ideas and putting events together when I was at secondary school and primary school and so on. And it kind of stuck with me over the years. And then someone said to me, well, you know, you should go into business. And I thought, okay, all right, I'll look into that. And I go, there is no such thing at University of the West Indies called a bachelor's in business administration. And the closest thing is management. And so there I go, off I go. And then I get into studying accounting, because if you're going to be studying management, my focus was primarily accounting courses.
Right.
And the reason why, I think I probably lasted 3 months in that role at my organization was because, and I'm sad to say this to all the accountants out there in the world, but I thought it was the most boring thing in the world to work in. And I remember 3 months in where my CEO, God bless her, says to me, so how's it going? How are you enjoying it? I said, I'm not. This is the most boring thing I've ever done in my life. And I have to say, God bless her, because she didn't look at that and say, wait a minute. So the person I just hired to do accounting hates it. Maybe I need to kick her out of my organization. But instead, she gave me an opportunity to do other things.
Wow. Okay.
And so that was what led to me then. First, I started out organizing and doing the administration and so on, associated with training programs and associated with getting facilitators and organizing conferences and workshops and seminars. And then there came a time when I was on the other side of the podium where someone was needed for an event and somebody says, well, wait a minute, you're trained as a facilitator, so you can do this. I'm like, okay, sure. And that's how that started. So It for me, I would say, has been a journey of evolution and growth.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate that it was something, it turned out, that I loved to do. And I think that's how I got it. Once I got into it, I kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to talk. So that that has been part of one of the things that probably has made it enjoyable for me. It's an opportunity where I talk. I talk about my ideas. I meet interesting people. I help them learn new things. And I think that's what I find most fulfilling.
Yeah.
And that, in a nutshell, is my journey. So I always say, when I'm talking to people about their careers, especially young people worrying about what they want to do in life, I say don't do that. Learn whatever it is you want to learn at university that you find interesting. It just forms a foundation, and everything else you can learn after that. Yeah. And where you start is never where you wind up.
Yeah, definitely. And what I think was really fortunate for you is that you had a leader, like you said, that understood that this just wasn't the right. Maybe she'd been there before and empathized, but the fact she gave that opportunity to swap something, that's a sign for me of a good leader, of a great leader. Yes. And she was a woman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've been very fortunate that for most of my career, I have had women leaders. So women in supervisory positions in my organization.
Yeah.
And you are absolutely correct. There's perhaps a different approach that you get from working with women. And my CEO, of course, was also someone in the organization behavior and organization development field.
Right.
And so she saw it more as, okay, if this person's not working in this role, but I think they have a good enough attitude that I can find another role, another way that they can bring benefit to the organization. Mm. Yeah. And I think that is perhaps, you're absolutely right, something that more leaders need to be open to seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, and one of the things that just came into my head, like it does, was the fact that I know certainly when I was coming up the leadership, that female leaders had such a bad rep. You know, you don't want to work for her, or she's this, or she's the B word and stuff like that. And really, I think the challenge is that probably still is today, to respect that we had to fight a lot harder because our decision making is often judged. You know, and maybe she could even be seen as being too soft, because how are you keeping this woman when she doesn't even want to do the job you employed her for?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I think, you know, like I said, I think it's definitely changed over time.
Yeah.
I'd
agree with you. That's okay. I was just going to say, I agree with you to a large extent that a lot has changed.
Yeah.
But I think in some instances that there are a lot of women out there that are still fighting the same battle.
Oh, absolutely.
And still someone is still saying to them, either they are too tough, and so they get tagged with the B word, or they're too soft and their decisions are questioned because they don't immediately behave. So it's almost a catch 22.
Absolutely. And I think working with the women I do, and that's definitely the field I work in, is actually giving them the confidence to stand by who they are, their authenticity, who they are. And yet someone is always going to doubt what you do, whether it's wrong, whether it's right. Someone is going to always have something to say. They always do. It's a given. And once you understand that and are confident in the decision that you are making, it makes a whole lot of difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you sometimes have to get to the stage where you don't take it personally.
Oh, gosh,
so it's not just you that they're doing this to. Sometimes the people who are even attacking you aren't even aware that they're doing it because it's a woman that's doing it.
Yeah.
They have perfectly logical explanations for why they're doing what they're doing. And so, as women, we have to learn how to live with that reality and move on.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Marjorie, describe for us one of your biggest challenges and how you overcame it and the lessons learned.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Of course, as you go along through life, I always see challenges as maybe something that didn't work out the way that I'd originally planned it. So one of the biggest challenges I reference, I think, would be when I was studying for one of my master's degrees. So because I started doing marketing as the first marketing degree, and then I went on later on and did one in human resource management and performance management. But with the marketing one, I picked the topic because I loved the idea of marketing as a concept.
I'm listening there.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really nice concept in theory and so on. And so I went into it almost knowing that I had absolutely no intention of working in marketing in a professional capacity at all. I was just doing it because it was interesting to study. I was going to do it, get this degree and get out of there.
Yeah.
And part of the thing that I found as I went on, because I didn't really have any passion associated with it.
Yeah.
I came to a stage where I had the dissertation to complete.
Yes.
I had 2 years, I think it, or no, I had probably a year. And I think I got an extension to another year, which then brought it to 2 years. And I had a deadline to get it completed. Put lots and lots of work into it and then stalled. Missed the deadline.
Okay.
Got a notice.
Yeah.
Didn't act on the notice. And then later on, got an email which says, you have this amount of time to get this document into us, or you will be deemed to have not completed this master's degree. So, of course, I go, I read the document, I scrape everything together. I'm like, but this is better than I thought it was. I thought it was absolute crap. This actually could make a little sense. Send it in. By the time it gets there, I get a note saying, I'm sorry, Ms. Wharton, you have not met the deadline.
Wow.
So you will not be awarded the degree.
Yeah.
So to this day, I still have it. So I have it as something on my resume because to me, it was one, it represented a really big lesson that I had to learn in life.
Right. Yeah.
And so because of that, I learned that one of the biggest problems I have was, I say was because I describe myself as a recovering perfectionist.
Ah.
So one of the biggest problems that I had in life was perfectionism. And so I remember working on that document. I remember doing the research, gathering all the information, starting the writing, putting it aside because I wasn't happy with it. And just kind of leaving it and wallowing and not dealing with it. And so what it taught me as a result of that was that the perfectionism for me was really, it's like an excuse.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm using it as an excuse to not take action when I needed to be taking action. And then the second thing that I learned is you should never do something you don't care about.
Absolutely.
Because I told you I had no passion for marketing whatsoever.
Yeah.
None. I wasn't even thinking about it as something that I wanted to study. I just thought you needed to get a master's. And so this is a topic that I found interesting. Well, why not do this one?
Yeah.
And so having learned that it's better to do something you're curious about and you're interested in, that's how I got into then studying human resource development and performance management, because I was actually curious about that.
Yeah.
And so for me, that as a big challenge that occurred in my life. You know, I don't like the idea that I fail at anything. And I remember sitting and thinking, well, what is the lesson that I'm supposed to take away from this? And having studied the second, or gone through the studying for a master's process the second time around, what I realized was I had to go through that process in order to learn.
Yes.
That really perfectionism was holding me back and I was using it as an excuse.
Yeah.
And I actually found the topic, studying human behavior, how people perform, how they act, I found that more interesting. Yeah. And it really has informed my career ever since.
Fabulous.
But I didn't know that at the time.
No, you didn't. And that reminds me.
I had to suffer a little.
Yeah, my mum used to always say to me, who can't hear will feel, you know? And it feels like one of those situations because you're not listening. You're just not listening to it, but you felt the after effects.
Yeah.
But what I love about that, Marjorie, is that how you really changed. You haven't called it a failure. You know, you haven't called it a failure, but you have used it to make a positive difference in what you're doing, because it's a constant reminder to you, look, this is what happens if you just don't follow your heart and something you're really passionate about. Yeah.
And the perfectionism thing. So I tell everybody about the dangers of being a perfectionist, because while you know, for all those years, I've always heard and I always would practice, if you're going to do something that you want to do it perfectly.
Yes.
It wasn't even that you say you want to do it to the best of your ability, but you're saying you want to do it perfectly. So I remember having papers to submit as an example or work to hand in or given, and you could be in danger of missing the deadline because you want to make sure that it's quote unquote perfect.
And
so you take the extra time to make it that so-called perfect, but it hasn't added any value. And we, a lot of things, times in life, we do that and we think that it's a good thing, and it's not.
I'm laughing because of the past couple of days, one of the things I've wanted to do is really up my video game on social media. And I've lost track how many times I've retaken a video because it just didn't look right. It wasn't perfect. And then when I end up going back after recording maybe 10 times, I've actually gone back to the first one going, oh, actually, that was the best one. You know?
It's a hard lesson to learn, but
very hard lesson.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, and I like the fact that you've mentioned that, because one of the people who are, or a lot that you hear from people who do a lot of social media videos and so on, they always say that what holds a lot of people back is that same thing.
Yeah.
Trying to make it quote unquote perfect.
Perfect. Yeah.
And
yeah.
they say that sometimes you just have to do it and let it go.
Yeah. And just adding to that, I'm going to say from a woman's perspective, perfection is in your eyes, because what you see is that flaw. Somebody watching that video can't see it, or it's totally overlooked it. So we've made it far bigger than it is in our head, because we have defined we've defined perfection. And as we know, that is just, it's subjective. So how can you, deal with something that's so subjective, you know? So, still a work in progress.
But the fact that you've tied it to women, it really seems to be something that a lot of women have as an issue, where you may find that there are women who are out there constantly saying to themselves that I can't do this, it's not perfect, it's not good enough. And one of the things, if we're going to learn anything from men, one of the things that we need to look at our brothers and realize is that there are times that they're perfectly willing to allow something to go when it's 50% or 75% okay. And they'll fix it in the rewrite.
Definitely.
At least they'll get something out there into the system. And somehow that's not how we were taught or how we were brought
up.
Most of us, we had to get it right the first time. The work had to be neat.
I have a reminder now in my office that has a post that says perfectly imperfect.
Yeah,
that's what I just need to remind myself of, that, you know, I'm perfectly imperfect. We all have flaws. So Marjorie, if you had to start from scratch, we talked about your journey, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
Oh, wow. I think I would, once I know what I know now and I remember it in time, I would not be so fearful to try things. Because I think a lot of the times I can remember, maybe I don't want to speak up in a crowd, or I don't want to speak up to the boss, or you don't want to say this at that time because you're worried about being judged. I remember being a young adult or late teens and having this thing in my head that I can't do that. I would die of embarrassment. Well, if I'm starting from scratch and I know what I know now, I will remember what I think at some point in my late 20s, I said to myself, you know, you're not going to die from this. So this notion that we all have when we are young girls and we're teenagers, that you can't say something, you can't do something because you die of embarrassment. I don't know where we got it from, but if we could help ourselves to realize it as early as possible, then we're less worried about attracting attention to ourselves. We're less worried about being judged when we speak up or if we're wrong. And I think that would allow us to try more things and do more things. I also think that if I was doing that, that I would have perhaps been more expansive in some of the things that I tried. So, like, you know, travel more, go out and meet more people, find more time, maybe sleep more. I was read more books.
I was about to ask you the question, extension of that. What is the one thing that you want to do that you've stopped yourself from doing?
That I've stopped myself. Well, there may be several of those. So the one thing that I want to do, I think I've stopped myself from doing, is writing. I've always wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
But to me, it always takes time. I remember when I was younger saying to myself, okay, I can't write yet because I don't have enough life experience. And I could feel that what I had to say in my mind didn't have any value.
Okay.
And so I stopped. But now I said, okay, so it's been a few years. You have some life experience. Yep. So what's your excuse now? Right? And so now it's to find the time, you know, because there's always an excuse, eh? There's always an excuse. So I think that is probably the biggest thing that I want to do that I've stopped myself from doing, that and traveling more, which I intended to start doing in a big way in 2020.
Yeah. Well, speaking from experience, when it comes to the writing, you have to just start. Literally, if it's 5 minutes in a journal, just start. You know, so that'd be my sharing my little tip to share my tip with you. So Marjorie, share with us what you think are some strategies women can use to help them achieve more prominence at work. You work in the corporate field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's easy.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what's the easy part. The easy part is, in many organizations, people are judged on their ability to do work.
Yeah.
So your ability to perform, your ability to deliver. Most women in organizations are focused on ensuring that what they deliver is high quality work.
Yes. Perfect.
And that they are getting things done the way they're supposed to be done.
Yeah.
So that's the easy part.
Yes.
That's the easy part for any woman in an organization to get noticed. Yeah. You're able to do the work. You're able to deliver what is required. Now, the hard part is to change your mindset. Because for many women in organizations, they have this story where they say to themselves that they can't do that because they're going to be judged. So they can't speak up because how will it look?
Yes.
They can't question the boss because how's that going to look?
Yeah.
They can't tell the person sitting next to them that they don't agree with what they're doing because that would be going against the greater norm or the group.
Yeah.
And then how is that going to look? And so the big shift, the hard part that I think a lot of us have to work on is to consider that none of that matters.
Yes.
And what you want to get to is an honest understanding of what you really want out of the organization.
Absolutely.
So if you decide that you want to be seen in the organization as a person who's capable and competent, then your way of operating has to be that you are going to let people see that you're capable and
competent. Yeah.
And that's what you're going to demonstrate. And so you can go speak to your manager to explain something, to ask a question, to seek information or clarification. And you don't have to be worried that person they're not going to like the fact that you've done that because you are being true to yourself.
Yeah.
And so I know, and you mentioned being a coach, and one of the things that I focus a lot on with my coaching clients is really to get them to shift that mindset change.
Absolutely.
To make that mindset change.
Absolutely.
Because until we change how we see ourselves and how we want to be seen and be clear about how we want to be seen, then we are only want, when that happens, then we really are going to get what we're actually hoping to get.
So true.
So my biggest advice to anyone in an organization is to keep focusing on the hard work.
Yeah.
But is the bigger part
is
focus on shifting your mindset so that you are not at the mercy of other people's opinions of you.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. And I just wrote a post quite recently talking about an experience I had at work where I deputized and I was waiting. I applied for the job, think I was going to get the job, you know, and stuff like that. And then they invited me in to meet my new boss after I've been doing the work. And I'm like, well, what happened? But when I looked at it, and, you know, this is a few years back, the person is male, so there's a whole different thing, a whole different argument there again. But he'd done a very good job at managing the perception of how he was perceived in the organization. You know, he put himself in front of the right people. Doesn't necessarily mean he was more qualified to do the job, but he wasn't embarrassed to put himself out there to make it known that I can do this. I may not have all the full capabilities, but look, I'm competent enough to be able to know I can do it, if not now, eventually. And whereas I was probably focused on, I can do this, let me show you how I can do this now, and not building those relationships, you know, like you say, not being worried about what people think, because always trying to give the right impression. So I love the piece of the advice you've shared there.
Yeah, and I'd like to add on to that, because what you've mentioned there as well is a lot to do with personal branding in organizations.
Absolutely.
Which I think a lot of people don't,
a
lot of women especially don't think about. And you're absolutely right that you do have to think about how are you being seen and how are you selling that message to other people. And you have to focus on that as well. And so oftentimes there are a lot of women who are saying, but my work should speak for itself. And
not a meritocracy.
The work will speak for itself, but only when somebody can hear it.
Yes.
Before they can hear what the work has to say, they have to know that you exist to look at the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so there are people out there in the organization who make it their job. If they see the boss coming down, they say good morning to them. How are they doing?
Yep.
How are the kids?
Water
if the boss
chat.
Goes, if the boss goes to XYFET, they go to XYFET so they can be seen there.
Yes.
There are people out there who are doing that. And some people look on that and see that as something that's beneath them because they think it's manipulative. But it's not manipulative. It's called marketing and it's called branding. And in an organization where you may have hundreds of people who are working, you cannot assume that the boss knows you as this one face out of the 200.
Absolutely.
So sometimes you just want to be willing to make that connection as well.
Absolutely. You've got to differentiate yourself because, like you said, there could be other people also have the same aspirations of you as you.
Yeah.
And they are all vying for the same job. They have the same, you know, goals that you have. But how do you make yourself different? And like you said, it's how do you stand out? So this is a great conversation, Marjorie. I hope everybody's listening. Some real good points here. So share with us a success quote or a mantra that you use and why it's meaningful for you, Marjorie.
A success quote or a mantra? Just one? I have so many Well, one of the things that I think I often say to people, and perhaps this is the one that I would want to leave with our listeners, and it's not mine. I actually got it from a colleague of mine, where I like to say it is what it is.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I'm using that one. There are many times in life where people, and I hear this a lot from people working in organizations, where they talk about how things should be. And they talk about the fact that the manager should do this and the manager should treat them in this way.
Yes.
And the person, the boss they report to should do this. And they should respond in that way. And I think a lot of us get caught up in that struggle and fight to change the reality of our circumstances, but not in a concrete way.
Yes.
We're just fighting and arguing with ourselves about what should be.
Yes, yes.
And I think that one of the secrets to success, if you will, is to acknowledge and accept the reality of our circumstances and then move from there.
Absolutely.
And so that's why, for me, that statement, it is what it is, is a powerful statement because it says to us that we have to look at the reality and then make some decisions. Can you live with what your reality is?
Yes. Yes.
If you can live with it, then stop complaining, make yourself strong, and figure out how to cope with it. Mm-hmm. If you cannot live with those circumstances, then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Are you going to try to change the circumstances, yeah, or are you going to remove yourself from
them?
If you're going to change the circumstances, then get to changing them and stop complaining.
Absolutely.
And if you're not going to do that and you're going to remove yourself, then get to removing yourself and stop complaining.
Yeah.
But either way, a lot of us waste a lot of energy in the complaining part. It doesn't help us. It just stresses mm-hmm. us out, mm-hmm. depletes our energy, and it stops us from being productive.
Yeah. So there's like a couple of things there. It's like either shut up and put up.
Yes.
Or choose the battles you're going to fight, you know, because sometimes it's just, like you say, just look at it. If you can make a change, you want to make a change, you're going to put the effort to make a change, but also what is the outcome of all that effort you're going to expend? Is it worth is it worth the energy? So yeah, it is what it is. And actually I do use that sometimes. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So Marjorie, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Relax. Yeah, I think that's the advice I'd give to my teenage self. I remember, and you wouldn't know it, I think. People who would have known me then would not have thought that about me, but I remember being concerned or worried about what happens next.
Okay.
Because the pathway forward was never clear for me. So I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to study next. I didn't know where I wanted to work. I remember what someone asked me, well, what kind of house do you want to live in when you grow up? I said, it's going to have four walls and a roof.
Yep.
Yeah, that was as much as I knew. And I think that at that age, where so many people around me had so many really great answers to that question,
mm-hmm.
People who knew they wanted to be lawyers, they knew they wanted to be doctors, they knew they wanted to go into research and so on. I had none of those answers, and I was a little concerned as to what the future would hold for this little girl who didn't know what she wanted to do next. And so I think that's probably why I say a lot to young people who ask the question and worry about their future. I say to them a lot that you don't have to know the answers for your entire career.
Yeah.
You really just have to have a good question now and make a decision about your next step. And that's as far as you go, and the rest will evolve.
Yeah.
So that's what I told her. Relax, babe. We got this.
Excellent. Relax. Just relax. And sometimes, I mean, even now I say to leaders, you know, you don't have to know all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
What you do need to know is where to go to find them. You know,
and that's
a difference. So relax. Stop stressing yourself out about not having the answer, because we're never going to have all the answers. We're just not built that way. You know, there are the people who are specialists in what they do. So we seek and find the specialist to get that answer. So I love
that. And I think a lot of us just are not comfortable with sitting in uncertainty or sitting in the question. I had a colleague who used to describe it that way, where you're sitting in the question. They think that immediately, as soon as you ask the question, you have to have an answer. And if you don't have an answer, something's gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And I think as we become more comfortable with the sitting in the question, it allows us to feel a little more comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, leaders, it helps leaders to perhaps get to the point where they recognize and accept they don't have to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
And know that if you're the smartest person in the room, you need a new room, because then it means that there's nothing left for you to do there.
Exactly. Yeah. And the strong leader surrounds themselves with the people that will have the answers that they don't have. That's why you
Absolutely.
Have a team. That's why you have a team. You know, choose the right people. So, Marjorie, what are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
Okay, I've learned that. Well, I've learned that I like to talk.
Okay,
I'm going to tell you why that's funny. I've learned that I like to talk. That's one. The second thing I've learned that I enjoy helping other people learn things.
Okay.
And then the third one is, for me, that I'm motivated by accomplishment.
Okay, goal driven.
I'll tell you why the first one is funny when I say that I like to talk, because I was one of those students who, growing up at school, always had the report card that said Marjorie talks too much.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, all throughout primary school, secondary school. And then one year in secondary school, I had a teacher who came up with a brilliant plan. He separated me from my friends. Yeah. And so when I didn't have anyone sitting next to me that I knew, I stopped talking. And so then my strategy was, I'd talk to my friends outside of class, but at class I'd sit with strangers.
Okay.
Because I was told and I was convinced that that was the way you're supposed to do it in order to be successful.
Okay.
And so then I go through life, I get assessed by the MBTI, I realize that I am quote unquote an introvert. Mm-hmm. Even though I have a low score and an inconsistency, I'm typed as an introvert. And as an introvert, I like to be quiet. I get re-energized by being by myself and so on, those types of descriptions. But then one day, somebody asks me to give a few opening remarks, and I'm like, right. But you didn't tell me this. You're asking me to do this now. How am I supposed to do this? And so I stand up and I talk off the top of my head, and I realize, okay, that was a halfback. Mm-hmm. And then I had another occasion where I had to do it, and I didn't write a speech. I just jotted down some notes, and I stood up and I talked, and I liked that. And I said, wait a minute. Turns out that maybe I like to talk.
Yeah, you're a natural.
And so I had to come to the realization that liking to talk and being introverted had nothing to do with each other. Because I do need a quiet space to re-energize, but I like to talk.
Yeah.
And I find energy in talking as well.
Right.
I find using talking as a tool, either to deliver a speech or to share knowledge with people, as something that gets me excited and helps me give value to the world.
Okay.
So I have learned that about myself as I've gone on over the years, that it's not just talking just for fun, but it actually is a useful tool that I can use and I can contribute to others and to the universe.
Right.
So that's one of those great things that I learned.
So we're coming down to our last couple of questions, Marjorie. Yeah. Where would we find you typically on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m.?
Either reading or cleaning.
Okay.
At home.
Okay.
Not the answer you were hoping for.
Well,
maybe something a little more interesting.
No, it varies. Some people, it usually falls around the home and stuff like that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Yeah. So
shopping or with the children and stuff like that. So it is what it's life.
And I know it, as boring, as dull and as boring as it is, that's usually what my Saturday mornings are about. Yeah. Usually I'm reading because I found something really interesting. When I should be cleaning, I'm reading instead. Or I'm cleaning. So that's about it.
So Marjorie, what does success feel like to you?
Freedom. To me, success means that you have the freedom to choose projects that you want to work on.
Yes.
You have the freedom to choose how you want to spend your time. And it also means that you can choose, let's say, to do a project, but it perhaps doesn't bring you money.
Yes.
But it brings you joy and satisfaction. Yeah. It adds value and it makes a contribution.
Yeah.
When you're caught up in the game where you constantly have to work, you don't have as much freedom to do things that you're passionate about or that you find interesting. You don't have as much time sometimes to dedicate because you have to run from this project to the next project. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So to me, to be able to get to a point where you're not just trying to survive.
Yes.
But you have time available to you. You can make some choices about how you use that time. To me, that is the overarching definition of success. Yeah.
And for me, like you say on that, it's like having work that you're passionate about, that, you know, that makes you, you know, that makes you want to do it. There's a big difference to having to do it because you need the money or whatever and stuff like that, to actually wanting to do it. So yeah, I really like that. I really like that answer, freedom.
Yeah.
And I really like that answer. Great value. So that was my last question, Marjorie. So if our listeners would love to connect with you or get in touch or find out more about what you want, about what you do, how can they do that?
Yeah. Well, they can find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is my primary platform where I share information. I write some articles and post them on there. I put I share different information. I see my role as really sharing business advice, sharing motivation, sharing leadership development and management development tips. And so on LinkedIn, it's Marjorie Wharton, and anybody can just find me there. I've started using Instagram for a similar purpose, and it's the same thing. It's Marjorie Wharton on Instagram. And my website is btpcoaching.com.
Fabulous.
Yeah, because the name of my company is Breakthrough Performance Coaching.
Fabulous. I'll be sure to leave your contact details in the show notes and on the video as well. So Marjorie, thank you so much for joining me this week on This Woman Can. It has been a real pleasure. And we actually get to meet, well, not quite in life, but more than LinkedIn buddies.
Yes, absolutely. It's been my pleasure being here. I've totally enjoyed having this discussion. And I love the name of this podcast. I agree with you. All of us women, we definitely can.
Fabulous. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Great discussion there, especially around perfectionism. And perfectionism shows up in so many ways. It shows up in you procrastinating from taking the next step. You freeze, or maybe you just get what I call shiny object syndrome. So you're distracted by other seemingly exciting new ideas. It's all self-sabotage, and it's all the things we're telling ourselves that everything has to be perfect. There's never a perfect time for anything, so you really have to stop waiting and just follow what's in your heart, what your dreams are. Now, if perfectionism is something that you feel has been stopping you from taking that next step in your career, or just basically making that transition, I know we're facing difficult times right now where we're being faced with more choices, more decisions that have to be made. Let's talk about how I can help you. Head over to www.janicesutherland.com. See how I help women just like you going for transition, facing challenges, procrastination, perfectionism, imposter syndrome, and much, much more. Or join the This Woman Can network at www.thiswomancan.coach. So until next time, take care. And remember, if I can, you can. This Woman Can. Until next time.